corn is still testing in the mid-30s and not quite mature yet.
If you wrote a prescription for row crop agriculture and had the temperatures and the rainfall that you needed to have the best crop, we've had it. We've had an ideal summer.
We would like to see a system in place that would allow us to easily and quickly trace back a diseased animal.
We need to put our resources into maintaining the disease control programs that have worked instead of looking at this anti-farmer program of NAIS.
I think it would be great if a lot of these folks who casually refer to the flu as something other than H1N1 would be face-to-face with these farm families.
It's said of him that he saved more lives than any other person who has ever lived.
Better to be a mile from hell headed out than 100 miles out headed in. And I think most livestock producers will look at 2009 and be relieved that we're headed out.
We think it'll be a fairly healthy recovery in milk prices. Certainly that's what we need.
I believe that we're doing the best we can with the technology that we have today.
Do you want a panel of Ohioans who have understanding of what it takes to feed the world to make those decisions? Or do you want Wayne Pacelli and his $10 million advertising budget to make that decision?
I'm Bob Meyer.
I'm John Perkins.
I'm Dave Russell.
I'm Julie Harker.
I'm Ken Anderson.
I'm Jerry Passer.
I'm Cindy Young with Brownfield.
And I'm Tom Stever, Brownfield, Ag News for America. 2009 demanded patience. Not only are there lingering contentious issues, such as the embattled National Animal Identification System and the climate change issue, but producers were forced to sit on their hands while a near-record crop refused to dry to a reasonable level, and fields were just plain too wet to navigate. Still, those who got their corn and soybeans out are justifiably pleased with their yields. Tom Vilsack became the U.S. Agriculture Secretary shortly after the inauguration of President Obama. He quickly became known for holding town hall-style listening sessions on various subjects. But he also faced food safety issues and animal welfare issues. Dairy producers faced a crisis resulting from low markets and high production costs. Pork producers learned the meaning of financial difficulty from a virus, a human virus, that could not seem to shake its misnomer. Activists bent on ending animal agriculture continued their efforts at passing restrictive ballot measures across the country. But Ohio voters took their own action, which is considered a victory for livestock and poultry growers there. A hero of the revolution died this year. The father of the Green Revolution is credited with saving billions of lives. Norman Borlaug's work and his humility continued well into his 10th decade. It's understatement to refer to the general economic climate as a downturn. The wallop of lost jobs, foreclosed homes, and businesses fading from existence is bound to have an effect on all facets of the economy, and that includes agriculture. A number of these events were felt up and down the agricultural landscape in 2009, in spite of the general economy's ills not having a full-on reaction in agriculture. Here's Brownfield's Julie Harker.
The financial crisis and global recession of 2009 touched agriculture and agribusiness. Economists in the first half of the year said the ag sector was spared some of the damage, but as the year went on, ag was not unscathed. Farmers, ethanol producers, equipment manufacturers, and the government took action to try and fend off the damage. Deere & Company, the world's largest farm machinery company, combined its ag division with its consumer and commercial divisions, which had a 25% sales drop in the first quarter due to the housing market collapse. In August, Deere & Company reported their third-quarter profit fell 27%, citing a loss from its construction equipment business and weak ag equipment demand. Cattle feeders saw a continued drop in profitability, and the food sector was also harmed by the downturn in beef demand. The National Biodiesel Board reported a drop in U.S. biodiesel production that fell to 30 million gallons in March, with the industry poised to slide back to 2006 production levels. NBB said the industry was not immune to the effects of the global recession and credit crunch. Several meat processing plants closed and are not expected to reopen. In July, Smithfield Foods, feeling the effects of the economic recession and the depressed hog market, took steps to stretch its operating capital. In May, Congress extended a provision requiring congressional oversight of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, to examine whether lenders that had taken bailout funds should help farmers and ranchers restructure their loans. By extending the provision to farmers and ranchers, it would help save farms and homes from foreclosure. Also in May, ag lenders became increasingly concerned about the creditworthiness of ag borrowers as the farm economy continued to weaken. Commercial banks tightened credit standards. State agriculture budgets were not immune as revenues dropped across every state. Decisions had to be made where to cut. In Wisconsin, many ag-friendly initiatives were spared the budget acts, and the Nebraska legislature was able to fend off a proposal by the Nebraska governor to use commodity checkoff funds to help solve the state's budget crisis. In August, USDA beefed up its efforts to help farm families and businesses struggling in the economic downturn. Ag Secretary Vilsack announced several actions taken through the Farm Service Agency, Rural Development Business and Industry Loan Program, and other programs designed to help ease their financial burdens through loan rescheduling, deferral, and in some cases, debt reduction. Stimulus package funds and appropriations made by Congress were paying for the relief programs. In August, ag bankers in the Federal Reserve Bank's Kansas City District said the overall farm economy remained solid despite continued weaknesses in the hog and dairy sectors. More bankers in the Fed's 10th District reported weaker farm incomes due to sagging protein demand and a summer decline in crop prices. With shrinking margins, livestock producers had been cutting supplies by culling herds and consolidating feedlots. Bankers on average estimated that livestock incomes would decline roughly 10% below year-ago levels and that annual crop incomes would decline roughly 15%. With lower incomes, farm credit conditions eroded during the third quarter. More bankers reported lower loan repayment rates and a rise in loan renewals and extensions, trends bankers expected to continue through the end of the year. At their annual meeting, ag bank leaders met with officials of the Farm Service Agency. One of the bankers said with more than $3 billion in the market, the FSA's guaranteed loan program had been crucial to keeping credit flowing. By November, USDA projected net farm income to be down almost 30% this year compared to 2008, the two main reasons, the decline in pork and dairy. The head of Farm Credit Services of America said they are working with producers to help them get through this crisis. I'm Julie Harker.
By the end of 2009, it's difficult for dairy producers to remember profitable times. As is the case so often in the collapse of commodity markets, there are a number of events that precipitated a bad dairy economy, not the least of which is the high cost dairymen encounter to produce milk. Brownfield's resident dairy expert Bob Meyer tracks the decline of dairy profitability.
After 2 years of milk prices hovering around the $20 mark, things started to slide at the end of 2008. A second year of drought in Australia and New Zealand, strong world economy, and hedge funds playing the dairy futures had all contributed to pushing prices up. Well, that contributed to growth in the U.S. dairy herd and milk production and monthly increases in cheese, butter, and powder production. But demand fell when the stock market taking prices with it. At first, it looked like the plunge would be short-lived when the base price for Class 3 fell to $9.31 in February. Futures were back to $15 by the fourth quarter, but as the year rolled on, production continued to be over year-ago levels and prices stayed low. Meanwhile, feed prices were not down proportionately, and milk-to-feed ratio set new lows every month. The Cooperatives Working Together, CWT program, went into action in late 2008 with a herd retirement program. Another round was launched on April 1st, but milk prices were still struggling. Another round was announced on July 10th, and then another October 1st. In the end, CWT took more than 250,000 cows and 5 billion pounds of milk production out in 2009. Chris Galen with the National Milk Producers Federation says that was what the program had hoped to accomplish.
Our own forecasts and the forecasts of everyone else, not just in the U.S., but the forecast for global prices is showing a recovery. We think it'll be a fairly healthy recovery in milk prices. Certainly that's what we need. But at the end of the day, when you look back at what were the various things that helped farmers survive, if we would have not had the program in place, cow numbers certainly would have dropped, but it would have taken at least an additional 6 months of $10 milk prices to reduce the national herd according to what CWT has already done so far in 2009.
The federal government also scrambled to help producers. In 2009, USDA spent about $1 billion buying non-fat dry milk and butter, along with the milk income loss contract payments to producers. In March, the Ag Department moved 200 million pounds from commodity credit non-fat powder into the USDA's food and nutrition programs. The Ag Department also fired up the Dairy Export Incentive Program, maxing out available sales support for fiscal 2009, and then again when fiscal 2010 began in October. In late July, Ag Secretary Vilsack announced a temporary 3-month increase in the support price for cheese and non-fat dry milk. At the time, USDA estimated that increase would lead to the government buying an additional 150 million pounds of powder and 75 million pounds of cheese. But the market moved higher to meet and then exceed the increased support prices. In the end, commodity credit didn't buy any product, but the Ag Department estimates it added $243 million to dairy producer income. In October, Congress passed an Ag Appropriations Bill, which included $350 million in dairy relief, $60 million of that to be used to purchase dairy products for federal food programs, $290 million for direct payments to producers. The formula for those direct payments was announced December 17th. Producers should be getting those checks in early 2010. As the industry crawls toward recovery, the big question is, how can we prevent this from happening again? There are renewed calls for reform of the federal market order system. Some say the federal government needs to take a more active role. And some, like National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson, say we need a supply management program.
It is a basic necessity. Food is a basic necessity. And so as a result of that, a little bit of shortage is a problem in the market, and a little bit of surplus is a problem in the market. So we really do think that you need to figure out some way to send a signal other than just letting the free market play with this and send a signal that comes too late to really change supply, that we need to have some sort of a managed system where you can put farmers in control, or you can have a government-operated program or whatever that is going to say, okay, if you've got a 5% surplus in milk, let's just figure out how we're going to put value on the 95% that has real value and set this other stuff off to the side and get ahead of these shortages and make sure that you've got a price signal that averts those things. When you talk to farmers, mostly they're pretty practical people, and they look at the depth of this crisis and say, you know what, we got to do something different.
While a number of plans and ideas have been put forward, many in the industry oppose supply management. They say, like it or not, the market worked in 2009. Demand fell, prices fell, producers were forced out of business, bringing production back into line with demand. I'm Bob Meyer.
It is said that hogs will pay the mortgage, but considering 2009, that wouldn't be the case. In fact, hog farmers have generally been operating in the red for some time before 2009. Brownfield's Ken Anderson is one of the reporters that's been telling the sad story for longer than he'd care to remember.
Producers came into 2009 hoping for a turnaround after an unprofitable 2008. And despite the difficult economic conditions across the country, there were signs the spring and summer months could bring a return to profitability for pork producers. But in April, a bomb was dropped on the industry.
It's a fast-moving new strain of the flu, and at this hour, the death toll is rising. Swine flu breeds in pigs, spreads then from person to person. It's infected 8 people in this country, 1,000 people in Mexico.
The official name of the new strain of influenza virus was Pandemic H1N1-09. Unfortunately and incorrectly, world health officials, politicians, and the media labeled it as swine flu. The pork industry and the USDA jumped into action, assuring the general public that the virus could not be spread by eating pork products or being around pigs. But the damage was done. Pork consumption in the U.S. and around the world dropped like a rock. 27 nations, including major buyers Russia and China, blocked all U.S. pork imports. Domestic demand plunged as well. Unsold pork piled up and prices plummeted. Before the H1N1 outbreak, hog farmers were already losing $11 off each hog they sold. The loss grew to about $21 per hog. In early May, the National Pork Producers Council said the hog industry was losing at least $2.5 million a day, with 19 straight months of losses. World Pork Expo, held each June in Des Moines, is usually a celebration of the pork industry, but the 2009 gathering was a rather somber event. MPPC announced that on average, the amount of equity that producers had in their operations had fallen from 40% on April 1st to the low 30s in June. But rather than feeling sorry for themselves, industry leaders went to work trying to figure out what the industry needed to do to dig itself out of the hole it found itself in. MPPC President Don Butler.
The leading economists tell us that in order for the industry to return to sustained profitability, the national sow herd is going to have to be reduced 3 to 5%, somewhere in that range.
There was a grassroots effort to launch a producer retirement program. Pork producer Chuck Wirtz of Whittemore, Iowa, chaired that effort.
It's strictly voluntary. I don't have a clue what kind of participation we'll get. We've gotten quite a bit of good feedback from people on the subscription level. We don't have any idea on the bid side.
But less than 3 weeks later, the effort was terminated due to a lack of interest among producers. As the industry continued to struggle throughout the summer, pork officials and state and national politicians turned to the federal government for some relief. In early August, 9 of the nation's governors sent a letter to President Obama urging him to take immediate action to help pork producers. Among those signing the letter was Iowa Governor Chet Colver.
We're asking the federal government to specifically purchase $50 million in pork purchases for government feeding programs.
The USDA responded. In early September, Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack agreed to buy another $30 million of pork, and in November, another $50 million purchase was announced.
This is hopefully some indication of our understanding of the stress pork farmers currently feel, and hope this provides some degree of assistance in getting prices back up to a point where they can support our family farmers.
And in late October, after months of negotiations, China announced that it would lift its ban on imports of U.S. pork, and pork exports overall continued to regain their momentum, recording their second largest monthly volume of the year in October. There was more good news in the fall. Despite another round of publicity about the H1N1 virus, it appeared to have very little impact on hog prices. The intensive efforts by the pork industry to educate consumers and the media about H1N1 had paid off. Meanwhile, hog market analysts continued to watch for signs of herd cutbacks. Bankers also were watching these developments with keen interest. At the Ag Bankers Conference in San Antonio in mid-November, Kent Bang of Bank of the West said it was clear the industry needed to reduce supply even further.
And I think that's underway. We're reducing, and probably over the last year and a half have pulled back maybe 6%. But I believe that we've probably got another 6% or so to pull back in order to turn this thing to where we can match supply with current demand.
But as 2009 drew to a close, there was a glimmer of hope. Hog prices strengthened in the fourth quarter, an unusual development. University of Missouri ag economist Ron Plain says it's an encouraging way to end this year. But he says it will likely be a few more months before the hog industry sees some profits.
We haven't had a profitable month any time here in 2009, but I think odds are real good for May, June, July, August next year to be profitable months.
As to whether those four profitable months next summer will continue through the rest of the year, Plain says it largely depends on the economy and meat demand. But he also predicts it may be 2012 before producers see solid profits on hogs. I'm Ken Anderson reporting.
The new administration meant new USDA leadership and new legislative debate on controversial issues. That's next. You're listening to the Brownfield 2009 Year in Review.